One caravan's on the mountains, one caravan's from the sea, one caravan's made the sun and the moon, every bird, every flower, every tree. One pair of hands on the valleys, the ocean, the rivers, and the sand. Those hands are so strong, so when life goes wrong, put your faith into one pair of hands. One pair of hands heal the sick. One pair of hands raise the dead. One pair of hands calm the raging storm. And thousands of people were fed. One pair of hands said, I love you. And those hands were nailed to a tree. Those hands are so strong, so when life goes wrong, put your faith into one pair of hands. Those hands are so strong, so when
of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around, whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound, when the man comes around.
And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him.
Well, greetings, everybody. Pastor Buddy joining you live tonight around the world on WWCR. We're glad to have you in here. Call a friend and a neighbor and tell them that Pastor Buddy and the Shepherd's Call is on the air tonight. You don't want to miss tonight. We're going to talk about, since spring has sprung, we're going to talk about the origin of Easter, how it came to be, and whether it's biblical or whether it's pagan. We know in the Genesis story of Noah in the Bible, very few people know about the number of sons under which Ham resides. And Ham became the father of a number of sons, and amongst them was Cush. And Cush became the father of Nimrod, which is mentioned in Genesis chapter 10, verse 8. Nimrod was an Ethiopian that was also called the Hunter. And he was the one that drove the people away from Yahweh by his mighty acts, which he done. Nimrod, together with his wife Semiramis and their child Talmuz, they became models for the pagan, the Trinity, three in one, sun god, and the following of the Holy Trinity of the Christians who later converted to this paganistic ways and still practice the global paganism that imitates the truth. It's not the truth. It has a way of seeming right. Easter has good intentions, according to those that keep Easter. Nimrod is a very popular all over the earth figure, and we know today that Nimrod is still famous and celebrated through the pagan rituals. And we have Zeus, Nimrod, Moloch, Marduk, Janus, Buddha, Boaz, Baal, or Abra, the wind god, and the wife Semiramis was known as Astar, the goddess Ishtar, Isis, from the Egyptian sun god. She was very popular, and still is, by the way. And so then, we have the goddess of love, the goddess that we worship today, and Semiramis was famous for being a beautiful woman, and was worshipped as the queen of heaven, and the goddess of the castles. She was also worshipped as the feminine aspect of the Holy Spirit. And she gave birth to the reincarnation of Nimrod when he was killed by a figure in the Bible, according to one of the books that didn't make it into the Holy Print, that he was killed, and she became a female god that brings forth a male god, and she names her son that she supposedly had after the death of Nimrod by divine conception, sound familiar? Talmuz, who is globally famous under the different names of different dynasties, Bacchus, Dionysus, Cupid, Dagon, the fish god, Hercules, Horus, Kissos, Ninus, Baal, Osiris, Shamash, son of Amphihop, Earthra, Mazda, or the white centaur. These are people that are globally known and worshipped in the Trinity as the three-in-one sun god. Later, the Catholic Church, now here's where we get interesting, would later adopt the pagan doctrine and use the occult gods that had established these holy days. They would incorporate them into church worshiping doctrines. In this way, the Roman Catholic Church copied the paganism, adopted it as their own, and brought it into the church. And it's still known in existing churches today as the Holy Trinity, coming from the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis and the 11th chapter, where we have the Holy Trinity of Nimrod, Semiramis, and her son Talmuz, which was conceived after the death of Nimrod by holy conception, therefore creating the Trinity. Now this is also gone into the church paganist days of what we would call today the Easter pagan spring traditions. The pagans celebrated spring each year for more than 1,000 years before the birth of the Messiah. And long before Christianity made its official entrance, they believed that spring, and it had been taught so, was a time of renewal as they worshipped the renewal of the sun, December the 25th, if you would like to know, spring from winter, the death of winter, with the revival of the sun god. And therefore, we have this pagan resurgence of the renewal and fertility as it represented a new life and the resurrection of nature after the death of winter. Spring festivals revived various sexual rituals which honored the sun's welcoming and morning rays after a cold winter. With its short daylight hours, snow and stormy nights, spring brought the promise of longer and warmer days, which offered life-giving forces, which was much needed. And the pagan goddess of spring and renewal is called today Ishtar, from the Scandinavian Ostra and the Teutonic Ostrine, or Ishtar, who were both goddesses symbolizing spring and fertility. These goddesses were honored on the venereal or spring equinox of the vernal spring equinox, and the Phoenicians called her Astar. The Assyrians and Babylonians called her Ishtar, which is pronounced just like the Easter word that was adopted into the King James Bible in Acts chapter 12, verses 3 and 4. Just as the English word Ishtar is now, and where we keep the tradition of Easter, the egg and its symbols and the rabbit or the hare came in to be adopted as symbols of the spring renewal and fertility. And as they came through the hard winter and saw spring as a time of rebirth, as the earth was emerging forth from new life, we had what is known now as the foundations of building to ward off evil. Pregnant Roman women carried an egg in the hope that it would tell them the sex of their child yet to be born. Man's relationship with the egg came from antiquity and was deeply rooted. There is an old Latin proverb which says, all life comes from an egg. After all, eggs are laid all over the world, and these myths developed all over the world that the whole universe was created out of an egg. Eggs are and remain an emblem of life and an allegory for rebirth. Ladies and gentlemen, the pagan days of Ishtar coming soon, basically, to a neighborhood near you. Now, we're going to the Bible, and we're going to get involved in a study in the image of jealousy, Ishtar. We're going to go to the 8th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, and we're going to begin to read in the 5th verse. And Yahweh said unto Ezekiel, son of man, lift your eyes now toward the north. And so I lifted my eyes toward the north, and there, north of the altar gate, was this image of jealousy in the entrance. Furthermore, he said unto me, son of man, do you see what they are doing? The great abominations that the house of Israel commits. This was the house of Israel. Ezekiel was a prophet to the house of Israel. Turn again and look, and I will show you greater abominations. Verse 7. So he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, there was a hole in the wall. Then he said unto me, son of man, dig into the wall. And when I dug into the wall, there was a door. And he said unto me, go in and see the wicked abominations which Israel is doing there. And so I went and saw, and there every sort of creeping thing, abominable beast, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed all around the walls, and they were worshiping them. And there stood before them 70 men of the elders of the house of Israel, And in their midst stood the Janoth, the son of Shaphan. Each man had a censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. And he said unto me, Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the room of his idols? For they say, Yahweh does not see us. Yahweh has forsaken the land. You know, that's what a lot of people are saying today, that Yahweh has forsaken the earth when the earth belongs to him. Don't you believe that Yahweh is going to repay, that vengeance is Yahweh's? We're living in a time of trouble. We're living in all this paganistic worship, and the majority of those that belong to the Christian church is out of the house of Israel, the lost sheep scattered abroad. Verse 13, and he said unto me, turn again, and I'll show you greater abominations that they are doing. And he brought me to the door of the north gate of Yahweh's house, and to my dismay, women were sitting there weeping for, guess who? Tammuz. Now, Tammuz was allegedly conceived in a conception. And Semiramis, the wife of this great man that was supposedly the son offspring of Cush, and he was a mighty hunter in the earth. And the Bible says that he was Nimrod, and he became a living God-man. Babylon. Babel. Ladies and gentlemen, the spring festival of Ishtar is originated through these festivals, spring renewals of the dead winter, with these who are weeping for Tammuz. You know why they were weeping? Here is the Son of God, Tammuz, according to the relationship that he had with his mother. He was birthed from her by immaculate conception long after that his father had died. We're talking about Nimrod, and she conceived from Nimrod after he died a son, and she named him Tammuz. And here the ancient Israelites caught up in the ancient worship of Tammuz. Here now, they are sitting in the temple weeping for Tammuz. Now, how did Tammuz die? We know from myth and from history that Tammuz loved to hunt just like his father. He was out hunting swine, and a great boar turned on him, injured with an arrow. And the great boar swine killed Tammuz, the God-man. He died from the wounds of a swine. Therefore, Ishtar incorporated the rituals of the Trinity and the birth of the spring equinox. The story had its birth in paganism or in myths. Here, the Catholic Church copied and brought into, it was very easy to convert the people, the pagans, which were already pagan, it was easy to win them over with a pagan doctrine. And so then, the pagan spring festivals incorporated all these things that we've read about into the ritual of Easter. Now, notice what they do. They have Easter eggs. They dye them so that it represents the colors of the sun, because it's the sun that is worshipped, the S-U-N, not the F-O-N. The S-U-N is worshipped as it renews in the spring. Therefore, with the tradition of this paganism coinciding along with the set rules that Yahweh laid down for his people, the true Hebrews, going back to Leviticus chapter 23, when he institutes and commands and brings forth the worshiping of keeping the Passover. The Passover and Easter is remotely related, although the Christians substitute the rituals of the pagan worship in favor over the scriptural version because of the killing of the lamb, when they preferred to recognize by eating ham, refusing the lamb and cooking the ham, because it was the ham that slayed their beloved Talmud. And so in keeping with the paganistic ways of remembering Talmud, they did this all over the world, because the whole universe was then convinced that the spring festival required the eggs and attribute to the sunlight of spring, and the rabbit representing the fertile sexual rituals that's incorporated into rebirth, as it was in the case of Semiramis, as she was impregnated after the death of her husband. Talmud was conceived. He grew up to become a man and married his own mother. Took her to wife, just like the bluebirds do today as they practice these pagan customs of keeping these rituals of fertility in their own bloodline. Thus, we have what is called the bluebirds. So, springing from Easter, we have those that were weeping for the Talmud. Verse 15, and he said unto me, have you seen this, son of man? Turn again. You'll see greater abominations than these. And so, he brought me to the inner court of his house, and there at the door of the temple, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of Yahweh, and their faces toward the east. And they were worshiping the sun toward the east. Now, one of the rituals of Easter is Easter sunrise services. Usually the husband rises before dawn, dresses real quick, and heads out to some place of worship pre-planned, usually a cemetery, where they have Easter sunrise services, because it's associated with the resurrection of the dead. For they turn their face to the east of the rising of the sun, just like they were doing in these pagan rituals back in the time of Ezekiel. Nothing new under the sun. What is to be has already been, and we have coming up. The way that these pagans practice Easter today, as opposed to Passover, there's nothing hardly remotely identical. They have the hot cross buns, these sweet buns with a cross. And I'll tell you how they got those through the goddess of the hordes of Scandinavian pagan goddesses as they worship. They slayed a bull. They took his horns and created a cross through his horns. Therefore, we get the cross buns represented as an ox. And we have the rabbit representing the fertility that died Easter egg as life resurrected, worshiping the sun god, Ra, by turning our face and looking into the face of the sun and its renewal. We have the symbols all in what we call here in Acts chapter 12. Let's go there and read the book of Acts chapter 12 as we pursue the pagan rituals of Easter, trying to replace, if you will, the ritual that was biblically called forth and called by Yahweh. Yahweh knew all these pagan rituals would replace his days, that it would be a test to those who would keep his laws and do what he said to do and do it in the way that he said. Coming up here in the month of April, we will have what is known as the month of Passover. We start by marking in the calendar, we mark what is known as the equinox, the day that the day and night becomes equal, usually on the 21st or 22nd of March. That's the first time that we have this, what we call the equinox, at the time of equalization. We know this from biblical. The word tekufu is mentioned in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 20. It means at the time of equalization of the revolution of the sun or the earth around the sun and the time that it takes. There's an equal time. We know by all over the earth that there were what we call Aryan sons of Yahweh, who religiously marked the time of the equinox. They had methods and ways of determining that day. It was very important to them. And the first new moon after the equinox is the custom day of the pagan, what we call the pagan Easter services on Sunday. Not S-O-N, but S-U-N day, Sunday. That is the time that Christians gather all around the world. They take eggs, which represents the fertility god of the goddess, and her renewal. They take the rabbits, which symbolizes, again, the rapid rate of reproduction. They do these pagan rituals. These same women that were in Israel weeping for Tammuz are doing the same today by symbolically remembering the pagan rituals of Ishtar, adopted and carried by these same Israelites into Europe. And they became the method of keeping Passover, as they totally replaced the killing of the lamb at the appointed time. Now, when is that, according to the Bible? Well, it's not according to what we would know in the New Testament. Listen. Now, about the time that Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass or persecute those from the assembly, he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because that he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded forth to seize Peter also. Now it was during the days of unleavened bread. Now remember, unleavened bread comes after the due date to begin the Passover ceremony. It's obviously that they were not Herod, nor any of those in religious authority. They were simply not observing the days of unleavened bread. So when he had apprehended Peter, he put him in prison and delivered him to four squads of soldiers to keep him, intending to bring him before the people after Passover. Peter, therefore, was kept in prison, but a constant prayer was offered to Yahweh for him by the church. Now, the word Passover here in my Bible, I read out of the New King James, replaces the Revised King James, which uses the word instead of Passover, it uses the word Ishtar, proving that those of the Catholic Church favored the pagan customs of Ishtar with the rituals of eating swine's flesh, dyeing Easter eggs, and bringing the fertile animal, the rabbit, and things of this nature into the pagan custom, and how it caught up with the people. They love the bright colors coming out in spring in their vest and their Easter bonnets as they style and profile, as they dye Easter eggs, as they weep for Talmuz, as they celebrate this pagan custom wrapped in tradition and denying Leviticus chapter 23. Now, what does chapter 23 of Leviticus say, Pastor Buddy? I don't ever remember reading anything in Deuteronomy that would deny the Passover. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is quite clear that Ishtar has nothing in common with what we call the Hebrew Passover. Go to chapter 23, and we're going to begin to read. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, the feast of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days you shall work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath. It's a solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on that day. It is the Sabbath of Yahweh in all your dwellings. These these are the feast of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim at their appointed time. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is Yahweh's Passover. Now, he'd already told them when they came out of Egypt, today is the first month. And so that was marked by the vernal equinox as the time came to the point of equalization. It equalized, and it was an observance in the heavens that could be measured. As it became equal day and night, the length of the day and the length of the night became the same. At that point, usually on March the 20th or the 21st or the 22nd, if it was a leap year. So then, we have a way to determine the day that he was talking about. On the 14th day at twilight is Yahweh's Passover. On the 14th day of the first month, that would be April, for the first Passover, May for the second Passover. Now here is the instructions. On the 15th day of the same month, the day after the 14th would be the high day. It is the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the same one that the apostles were observing and the people were keeping when Herod put forth his hand and killed James on the word change from Passover to Easter. Make a note of it in your Bible. See if it says Easter. Because you've got the wrong Bible, the wrong translation. If you don't want to buy another Bible, just underline that word and above it, make a note. Passover changes the word completely to where you come back instead of saying, tomorrow is Yahweh's Easter. She didn't say that. Yahweh is bringing forth his customs. Nimrod and Semiramis and Talmuz adopted the pagan customs, which was adopted by the Catholic Church, which then was carried on as a tradition by the Protestant churches. Most Protestant churches are caught up in Easter, eating swine's flesh, dying eggs, and worshiping chocolate bunnies. Candy was passed out. Special treats. Easter baskets. These are all symbols of the paganism of the days of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Talmuz. The goddess who the Israelites were worshiping, as we know in Ezekiel chapter 8 that I've already read for you. Tomorrow is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day, you shall have a holy convocation at the 15th. You shall do no customary work on that day. But you shall make an offering made by fire to Yahweh 7 days. How many people do that? The seventh day shall be a holy convocation, and you shall do no customary work. Well, if you count the 15th day, and you're going to keep it 7 days, the seventh day would be the 22nd day of the month. So 15 and 22 would be High Sabbath. Well, we know one was a new moon. That was the day that they marked and began their count with the calendar that they used. It was an astrological calendar, not a man-made, devised, paganistic, Roman Catholic calendar. You that are worshiping the pagan days of Saturn day being the day of the high day have been deceived by those who deceived and brought in pagan customs such as Easter. It's all out of the church that is mentioned in Revelations in chapter 17. You would do well to read it and to study it and to, above all, come out of her, my people. Why? Because that you receive not of her sins. The people that follow these customs, and the Bible said you will keep his Passover forever. Notice again, and Yahweh spake unto Moses, and saying, verse 10, speak to the children of Israel and say unto them, when you come into the land which I give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring forth a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. You shall wave the sheaf offering before Yahweh to be an accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And you shall offer it on that day when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to Yahweh. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah, of fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to Yahweh for a sweet aroma, and its drink offering shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain, nor fresh grain until the same day that you have brought an offering to Yahweh. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. Now this is the first fruit festival. We've done discussed the Passover festival where a lamb was to be offered on the day of Passover. That's the 14th. Well, we know by the teaching of the New Testament that Yahweh, the Savior, was offered on the 14th day of the month at Passover. And he was offered up as an offering. Symbolically, Yahweh died for the sins of Jacob Israel, even those that were weeping for Talmuz in the days of Ezekiel. All have sinned. All have come short. All under sin must be covered by his blood offering. One offering made on behalf of Israelites, the sons of Jacob, the offspring, the lost sheep especially, in this last day, wandering, dumb, blind, ignorant, keeping Easter in these Christian pagan churches who have changed the word of Yahweh into a lie, incorporated the customs that I have spoke about in the festival of Easter, denied Passover, and shall bring upon themselves the same swift destruction that Israel brought upon themselves as they were destroyed and scattered abroad. Here now, the Messiah, the living lamb, the special sanctified offering for Passover, he comes and offers himself a living sacrifice on the 14th day of the month that we would recognize as May. He did not keep or die in the first Passover. He was rejected from keeping the Jews' Passover according to the Bible. In three places that we can read that he survived the first Passover. You say, well, what difference does it make, Pastor? But, well, it makes all the difference in the world on what Passover he died on, so that we know in what season. It's one of the mystery elements that we teach as a prophetic gospel keeping people here in these days, as we read in the 26th chapter of the book of Matthew. We're going there to read here as we go to the 26th chapter, and we're going to commence reading. Now it came to pass that when the Messiah had finished all these sayings, that he said to his disciples, you know that after 2 days is the Passover, the one he spoke about in Leviticus chapter 23. That was meant for him to keep the first Passover. But the Jews, who recognized that there was a large congregation of people at that time, everyone who was a Hebrew throughout all the land of Galilee and throughout the land of Judea, they had together at Jerusalem to keep the Passover. You know that tomorrow is the Passover, and the Son of Man, this is on the 13th now, on the 4th, that the Son of Man would be delivered if you were unclean. A woman came to him having an alabaster flask or a box, a very costly fragrant oil, and she poured it upon his head as he sat at the table. But when his disciples saw it, they were displeased, saying, for what purpose is this waste? It was Judas that did the comment. For this fragrant oil is very costly, and it could be sold for much and given to the poor. Ladies and gentlemen, we see here in the book of Matthew that the Jews refused to kill him in the first Passover. What they did, in the length of time I've got, as I hurry over this, I will do a complete message on the second Passover and explain in depth as we go into the Bible to prove our points. We're just trying to give you information that will help you to come out of tradition. Depart from Easter. It's all pagan. Have nothing to do with it. Do not eat swine's flesh. Do not color Easter eggs. Do not associate with the people that do, who are actually keeping and weeping as they celebrate the days of Talmuz, the godchild of Nimrod and Semiramis. You need to come out of her, come out of that. It's a pagan principle that you should touch not, taste not, and have nothing to do with it, but separate yourself from it according to the Bible. We know by the authority of the Word that they put off killing the Messiah. Now, there's a very unknown clause that we're going to identify here in the book of Numbers, chapter 9. It was an escape. If you were unclean or unqualified to keep the first Passover, there had to be a second chance for you. And it was explained to Moses that anyone was unclean by reason of a death or burial in a family, anyone had that problem, they were excused from keeping the first one, but they must, 30 days later, keep the same rituals associated with the second Passover. And this is what they've done. If anyone's in a far journey, well, Christ, we know that after he was condemned by eating at the leper's house and associate with a leper, that would disqualify him. We know also, according to the 12th chapter of the book of John, that he raised Lazarus 6 days before the Passover. That would have disqualified him, because touching the dead body of Lazarus would disqualify him. They knew that he had done these things. And so it was an escape for the Jews not to kill him on the first Passover, but to surely kill him in the second one. As they branded him unclean, he had to return 30 days before the second Passover, or after the first Passover, return 30 days later, and there, when the crowd had thinned out in Jerusalem, they impaled him and killed him on the second Passover. Now, that's a revelation of why we keep the second Passover. You would do well to search the scriptures out, because Yahweh loves the people who will seek and to search. These things are hidden from the wise and the prudent, revealed to just little babes. You know, we've got people that are offended when little children do things for Yahweh. We should never be offended when a childlike faith steps up. Sometimes we look at them with scorn instead of treasured eyes. Because suffer little children, he said, to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Yahweh bless you tonight. Yahweh keep you. And Yahweh give you understanding about the pagan rituals of Easter. But greater yet, may he give you revelation of keeping the true Passover and taking the cup and the bread and remembering him. As often as you do that, once a year, you don't have to do it every time that you gather. These are traditional errors of the Christian churches. As they think they come together, they get a little grape juice, and they bake the bread, pass it out, set in their nice warm comfort zones. They don't have to kill the lamb. They don't have to hear the bleating of the sheep. They don't have to keep any of the rituals and go to those troubles. They can keep that, and it has a show of godliness, but it denies the power and authority thereof. May Yahweh bless you tonight, and may he keep you. If you'd like to write me tonight, I need your help financially. We're in a process of building an assembly for Yahweh, a place where we can meet three times a year here at the Kingsgate Inn and have services to keep according to the scripture, not according to tradition, but according to scripture. Is there any reward in that, Pastor Buddy? Only in the world to come. If you kept the faith, you've not denied his name, there's a treasure laid up for you. Write me tonight. Post Office Box 568, Sweetwater, Tennessee, 37874. Now, we're putting a new roof on the assembly. We've got the septic system in. We've got the power turned on. We've got the permits satisfied for county building permits. All that is in the past. We've got that covered. We need at least a $4,000 offering to put a roof on our building. We also need other funds to do the inside work, the electrical work and things of that nature, to bring the inside up, the sheetrock, and the refinishing of the inside, as we have completely remodeled this used, huge, double-wide. It's a 28 by 70. So we're wanting to put a new roof on it. Help Pastor Buddy send me your tithes and offerings. Yahweh will never forget you. We'll teach the truth for you. And we'll have a place that you can come. If you ever can, you'd be welcome. That's Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 568, Sweetwater, Tennessee, 37874. Now that's Sweetwater, Tennessee, 37874. Post Office Box 568. You can address all your letters to Pastor Buddy. You can go to our website tonight. We have many articles and many messages taught on this same subject that I've taught on tonight. You can go there. That's oneyahweh.com. Oneyahweh.com. That's oneyahweh. Oneyahweh.com. That's our website. You'll see a lot of information concerning what Pastor Buddy has taught on tonight. We have hours and hours and hours of messages that relate to the subject. Yahweh bless you. I'm sponsored by Dr. Gary tonight. His number is 1-877-289-7439. And I really appreciate the sponsorship that Dr. Gary has given me. We've been on WWCR for years and years and years. Maybe this is the first time you've ever heard us, but we've been here for many years. So, here now we have a better starting time, 9 o'clock. We have a prime starting time. Dr. Gary has long wanted this hour. He secured it. And we came back to WWCR. As we moved over to WWRB, we've moved back to the Sunday night slot, and we're so glad to be here. We're here every Sunday night at 9 Eastern Standard Time. Call Dr. Gary and tell him you heard Pastor Buddy and the Shepherd's Call. Call Doc at 1-877-289-7439, and I'd be much obliged if you would do that. Praise Yahweh. We're only wanting to open the eyes. The ancient Egyptian name for the hare, the rabbit, was Un, which means open. We like to open your eyes, but we don't have to pull a rabbit out of a hat to do it. We just want to pull the scriptures out. And you could look at it. The legend indicates that the hare never closes its eyes at all, not even to blink, thus remaining always open. And the probable reason is that hares are born with their eyes open and rabbits are born blind. They that offer up rabbits and eggs and swine's flesh are still blind. We come to open your eyes. We come to give you the truth and to point out the differences between biblical Passover and Christian Easter. May Yahweh bless you. I'll be back here tomorrow night around the world on WWRB 3.185. I'm now broadcasting on 2.390, and we're all simulcast on the internet here tonight on WWCR on 4840. We're all simulcast on the internet. Also tomorrow night we'll be on the internet, and we will be live, hopefully, on 2.390. We lost our service last night through related storms, didn't get to be on, but you got my message that I preached on last night. We brought it back as part two of the Heir of Paganism of Easter. May Yahweh bless you. I'll see you tomorrow night. Join me tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on WWRB. Yahweh bless you.